Hello, I'm David Lowther, and I'm here to talk to you about my most recent novel, Ordinary Heroes. In just a moment, I'll read a short extract from the opening chapter of the book, which is set in a large country house somewhere in Hertfordshire, England, in 1945. 18 former fighting men, all severely traumatised, mentally or physically, or both, are trying to recover from their wartime experiences and rejoin society. One of these men is Lieutenant George Aaron, one of the ordinary heroes of the title. He is suffering from severe mental shock, resulting from his appalling treatment at the hands of the Gestapo in eastern France during the closing months of the war. Ordinary Heroes by David Lowther. Chapter 1. Lieutenant Aaron. George slowly turned his head to see who was addressing him by his formal rank. A middle-aged man with thin, fair hair that was swept back to reveal a shining forehead had replaced Jim, standing iron rod straight, hands tucked behind his back and legs akimbo. For a moment, George was reminded of his old commanding officer, Lieutenant Pierce, but he hadn't seen him since the Battle of Primusol Bridge, and he couldn't fully remember what he looked like now anyway. Apart from this, he thought Lieutenant Pierce was dead. It couldn't be Lieutenant Pierce. So who was this impostor? And who did he think he was, addressing George by his army rank when he was no longer army? No longer anything, in fact. The impostor was smiling, his blue eyes looking gently down on George. George even thought he could see some measure of kindness in his face, not dissimilar to Lieutenant Pierce's when he was encouraging the troops on, regardless of how hopeless the situation was. George stood up, using his powerful legs to lift himself from the floor, or the seat of the armchair was just about the same thing. His life might be a wreck, but physically he was still whole, and there was no way he was going to sit in the presence of Lieutenant Pierce. No, not Pierce, he reminded himself, but somebody very like him. The young soldier stood to his full 6 feet, trying to look strong and fit, smoothing down his neatly trimmed black hair, but unable to hide the confusion on his face. "I'm Colin Walters, one of the staff here. I wonder if we could have a little chat in my office." Walters was a good 4 inches shorter than George, and he had to reach up to offer a firm handshake. George took his hand and held it limply, not quite sure what to do. Shouldn't he be saluting? He dropped Walter's hand and shuffled his feet awkwardly instead. "Let's go to my office and we'll have a cup of tea," Walters continued. George meekly followed him out of the lounge, wondering who the hell this bloke was and what he wanted. As he wasn't Lieutenant Pierce, he could be anyone. Couldn't be a doctor, though, George thought, because he was dressed in a short-sleeved pale blue shirt and a pair of dark slacks. If he was a doctor, surely he'd be wearing a white coat. Not forces either, or he'd be in uniform. Did he know him then? Was he an old friend he couldn't remember? George's head buzzed with something he hadn't felt in a while, curiosity. "Please sit down, Lieutenant," Walter said, pointing to a more stable-looking chair from the one which George had recently risen with some difficulty in the lounge. "Shall I address you by your rank, or would you prefer George?" "George is okay," George muttered. And he sat down and stared at his unlaced boots. He'd never noticed it before, but now they reminded him of worms wriggling away so he quickly leant forward and tied them. He looked up to find Walters watching him, the same kind smile on his face, but this time tinged with something else. "Approval? What do you want from me?" George asked, prompted by that strange look, but unable to keep a hint of aggression from his voice. "Nothing. I'm a listener. At least I like to think I am." That threw him. George looked Walters in the eye. "What do you listen to?" he asked, the curiosity he had felt earlier growing again, like a knot in his chest. "Things that people like you, tell me about themselves." George looked suspiciously at the man. "Why?" he asked. "I'll answer that in a moment. Tell me, George, why do you think you're here?" "Because I'm fucked up," George said angrily, looking down at the floor again, avoiding Walter's eyes but expecting some kind of rebuke for his language. "But I don't know," he conceded. "I don't know anything anymore, really." I do, and I know what happened to you, do, George, Walters gently replied. George gave Walters a short, piercing glance. How do you know? You weren't there? No, of course I wasn't, but I've talked to people who were, friends and colleagues. Why? You've no right. What are you trying to do? George asked, raising his voice and clenching his fists. I'll answer that with another question. Do you want to stay here for the rest of your life? Of course not. But I'm in no state to leave. What would I do? Where can I go? I can't face my friends or my family knowing what I'm like now. Then that's the answer to your question. I want to help you to be able to leave. Look, it's nearly one. I don't want you to miss your dinner. Let's pick this up tomorrow morning. Is that all right? Walters asked. You reckon you can make me feel able to leave here? George asked, incredulous. You know how to do that? I certainly hope so, Walters said. So what do we say? We'll talk properly tomorrow.